Off the Ball Breakfast.
Mad the wrestling in the 90s was. Like, people cutting their face open, jumping off the top of the cages, like sleeper matches, buried alive matches. Like, as a kid, I watched it and thought, like, oh, this is all real, but it's watered down now, isn't it? It's nowhere near it. When's the last time you've seen somebody being hit by a chair in wrestling?
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
We have Westmeath's finest, Adrian Barry, here as we all know, the presenter of the pay-per-view for the News Round. Good afternoon, Adrian.
JD.
How many Meath people have you texted this week?
I don't have to go that far to text anybody from Meath. JD happily one sits across the breakfast table and dinner table, and my wife is from Navan, so it's been a joy. If only she gave a toss about this stuff, that would be extra benefit.
Presenting her with Westmeath jerseys for Christmas.
Correct. So our family was split. There was two kids in the house at the time as the game was unfolding, and I was listening to it on the radio around the house, and my daughter had gone the Meath side. Listen, everybody makes their life choices, JD. We'll see what happens when her birthday comes around. But then my youngest fella, 4-year-old, he decided he was all in Westmeath, and he made the right choice. You know, he didn't go with popularity contest. He didn't go with where everybody felt, you know, the powerhouse, the behemoth amongst the contenders of the All-Ireland. He didn't take the easy route, JD, and he jumped on board the Westmeath train. And what a train it was.
Yeah, 4 goals, amazing stuff.
It's a lot to be excited about, I have to say. I'm not going to hide that. I am excited about where Westmeath are at. That's been tempered quite a bit over the last couple of years, particularly. Last year was tough. They kept losing games by a point, 2 points, but they were running very good teams close, and you kind of felt this will at some point turn. Now, all body of evidence was suggesting that might not happen, you know, particularly when you look at the last game of the league. And they get beaten by Wexford, and you know they lose that opportunity for promotion. But I mean, there's a lot of reason to be excited about this Westmeath team. You know, 5 of the 6 starting forwards are on the score sheet. Shane Corcoran, the quality of the scores. I've watched not the goals, but that point where he just dips inside the 40, he feigns to shoot, hops the ball, drops the shoulder, blitzes his man. Man is left for dead. And outside of the right boot with a little fader over the bar. Just an absolute thing of beauty, whether you're from Westmeath or not. But we'll see. Like, it could all come crumbling down next weekend in Tullamore against Kildare. But for now, life is good.
I think it's important as well to highlight these players and the moments they have in games, even if they're not part of the, you know, they're not a show stealer like David Clifford might be every week. Like Darren McGurn for Fermanagh got 112 from play yesterday against Armagh. You know? So these are the things that are important to highlight, just because a county might not be winning a provincial title or whatever. But
well, do you know, even on that point, JD, it allows beating a team like Meath from a Westmeath point of view, it allows a better quality of conversation about what Westmeath are doing. Because what happens for teams in Division 3 is it's all one-dimensional. And, you know, like there isn't any great in-depth conversations about it because nobody really wants to know outside of the county that's involved. But suddenly across the board on our own platform and on others, you're having deep conversations about, you know, whether Corcoran's going to get this much room the next game he's in, the quality of play that Luke Loughlin is bringing to it. Matthew Whittaker, you know, scoring a goal from left half back. If the All-Stars will pick tomorrow, he's on the team. You know, there's a better quality of conversation about it. So,
and outside managers, how they do, Mark McHugh. Yeah. We have Limerick and Cork, obviously, as we know, at 2 o'clock at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And John Kiely says his side will face an incredibly challenging match. Limerick came out on top when the sides met in the league final. As we know, Cork bounced back by beating Tipperary last weekend in Thurles. And that defeat has left the All-Ireland champions in a bit of a sticky position to go into Waterford at 4 o'clock. The day show yet to get out of the round robin series. But Cork and Limerick, I'm sure a lot of writing about it. I'm a bit between two minds. I think the Munster Hurling Championship is the most brutal, fantastic, most competitive, fiercely competitive championship out there in any sport almost, and definitely in Irish sport. But then, you know, I was watching Kilkenny Wexford last night, the highlights on the Sunday game, and I'm going over to the Saturday game, and I'm kind of going to myself, is this a bit uneven? Is this a bit unfair?
Richie Hogan was injured the week on Thursday, and I was chatting about this, and he was saying that he's not sure that the Munster Championship, like we do get very invested in it as a thing, and the team that comes out on top, I mean, they're absolutely, you know, some version of nailed on to win the All-Ireland, and he's not sure that that's necessarily, obviously, not necessarily been the case over the last number of years. But it does equally feel as if this game at Super Value Páirc Uí Chaoimh today could be a showcase for the All-Ireland finalists, potentially. Limerick obviously just back from their warm weather training. Cork, as you say, with that game under their belt. And the idea of it being, as Mark Gallagher poses in the Mail on Sunday today, the last dance for this Limerick group. I was saying on the pay-per-view, I was looking at it going, there must be a load of typos in this, because he's saying that, you know, 11 of these players are going to be over 30 over the course of this championship, you know, and that Sean Kiely's last year and this idea of the last dance. This team not all 21 in my head. They're not. They've aged, it turns out, over the last...
You see, their lives change. They have maybe partners, children, different jobs maybe. Things change from 2018. It's what, 8 years on. So that's the issue. There is a bit of Dublin 2023 about it for me with Limerick. But you've got players come into the picture now. Aidan O'Connor, I suppose, being the key one. But they still have that nucleus of real talent. But it is fascinating to see what they're going to do this year, because they pretty much play the best team throughout the league. Only one change from the league final, with Aaron Gillan injured and Peter Casey coming in today. So I think Cork will be relieved that they beat Tipperary. It takes the jeopardy out of a bit for them. And then I just, the Cork support was one thing I really noticed about watching on TV last week, the amount of support they had in Thurles. Mm. More fans in Tipperary, it seemed to my eye. And how will that impact them positively now? You know, the real momentum county. Will we see Brian Hayes and Alan Connolly, you know, make a big contribution today? So I'm just fascinated to see the tactics, the styles, the intensity, top of the ground hurling, great weather. Should be a real cauldron.
Yeah, I think particularly given how close to the sun they flew last year, and then the manner of how it all became, how it all unraveled for them in that second half in the All-Ireland final, it probably has engendered like a stronger bond probably between the Cork fans and the players, in the sense that, you know, they now desperately want them to get over the line and get this thing done.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's 2 o'clock, then we 4 o'clock, Waterford against Tip. Galway looking to build on a strong opening day win over Kilkenny. They host Offaly in the Leinster Hurling Championship this afternoon. Dublin going in search of their first victory of the campaign, welcoming last year's McDonagh Cup winners Kildare to Parnell Park. 2-3 from Mossy Cohen, helping Kilkenny beat Wexford 5-21 to 1-16 last night at TJ Reid's Hall. A 1-8 took him ahead of Patrick Horgan as the top scorer in the championship. And the Kilkenny captain says the result was more important than that individual historical record.
I don't know how long I'll have it. Records are always there to be broken. So look, it's nice to have it for a time being. Actually, look, it was about responding back to last week. You know, that was the big thing. We underperformed in Galway, and this week there's an awful lot of pressure, and rightly so. And media experts writing us off. But look, rightly so. It was a bad performance. You're entitled to your opinion. And we knew that there was more in us. We knew that we said positive. We missed 6 goals against Galway, and momentum shifted. You know, if 1 or 2 of those goals went in the first, we missed 3 goals in the first half. We could have been up by 6-7 points at halftime. And then the game turned. We went down 13 men. And unfortunately, then Robert got their goal, and they went 9-10 points up then. And it's very hard to claw back with 14 men. So look, we said positive. We knew that we weren't happy with how it performed. And today, the 5 goals went in, and we could have had maybe 1 or 2 more.
TJ Reid, you're entitled to your opinion, but not your facts. The facts are that he has now got 41 goals, 657 points in the championship history to make him top scorer over Patrick Horgan, who's obviously retired. So incredible stuff from TJ.
That's just like your opinion, man. the expression goes. But do you know what? Was he talking specifically to off the ball there? I'm not sure about that, because there was a lot of opinion.
No, I think it was a wider media group. Yeah.
Because
there
was a lot of opinion on here during the week. I'm thinking about Podge Collins, Sarah Donovan. I'm thinking about Tommy Welch. I'm talking about Richie Hogan. And there wasn't a massive sense, and there was an evidence for it if they wanted to go that way, but like certainly a lot of counterpoints around Kilkenny. Now, I'm not suggesting that a team, obviously, who, you know, didn't make it outside of the Leinster last year, and, you know, were operating, was it in Division 3 of the leagues Kilkenny are ahead of where that Wexford team should be. So I wouldn't be taking yesterday as a body of evidence.
No, I mean, the Galway defeat was Kilkenny's worst championship defeat in Leinster since 1990.
Yeah,
and the league result was one of the worst since the 50s. So it's legitimate to ask questions about Kilkenny, because they're the establishment team in hurling. I mean, there was the big three, and then it became the big one in the Cody era.
Yeah,
and if Kerry were undergoing this kind of form, you'd be asking questions. If Kerry lost by Cork to 15 points, be asking those questions.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and
it's only out of a position of care because we want to see as strong a championship as possible. That means as many contenders as possible. If Kilkenny are not at the table, then that's an issue for the championship.
Richie Hogan was kind of half accepting that there might be a bit of transition involved at Kilkenny at the minute. So Wexford Division 1B, of course, finished third in Division 1B this year. So yeah.
Holders Donegal take on Down in the quarterfinals of the Ulster Football Championship today. The 2024 All-Ireland champions Armagh booking a spot in the semis. They'll await the winner. So Sinn Conn, she sent over 5 points. Kieran McGinney's side beating Fermanagh 232-124 at Brewster Park yesterday. Kerry and Cork will contest the Munster Football Final next month. David and Paddy Clifford scoring 210 between them, a 219-114 victory over Clare in Ennis. Chris Oak-Jones raising 2 green flags for Cork. Their 4-18-112 win to Tipperary. Watching that again last night. Can't deal with football at Semple Stadium. Doesn't look right.
JD.
Doesn't look right. Hurling snob here.
Snob, exactly.
Yeah, a repeat of last year's final in the Munster Senior Ladies Football Championship this afternoon. Holders Kerry taking on Waterford in Tralee after Tipperary's 2-point win at League Champions Cork last night. Meath host Kildare and Leinster's round robin. Last year's All-Ireland Intermediate winners Donegal go to Armagh in the Ulster Championship. Now, rugby-wise, Ireland head coach Scott Beaman says they're frustrated but determined to come back stronger after last night's loss to France, the hosts scoring 3 second-half tries to win 26-7 in Claremont in the Women's Six Nations. Beaman insists his team will keep getting better ahead of their upcoming home games with Scotland and Wales. Centre Aoife Dalton says they need to be more clinical in the first half.
I think just when you play any of the top tier nations, like, it just comes down to fine margins, and like, if you take the game today, like, we needed scores in the first half. We were camped in their 22 and we just didn't get it, but yeah, I think there's positives to take, but I think in terms of how we get a performance, it's how many of, like, I suppose we always say you're not going to win every moment, but it's the moments you can win, just taking full advantage of them, and whoever can move on quickly and build on that momentum, it's probably going to go their way. So, you know, we had no illusions coming into this. We knew it wasn't going to be perfect, and, like, even when the tries weren't converting and stuff, we just knew we had to go again because, you know, they're inevitably going to come back at us.
Aoife Dalton there. Our reporter Darragh McNaughton was in Claremont last night, still in France. Good afternoon, Darragh.
Good afternoon, lads. How are things?
Not too bad, thanks, Darragh. What did you observe? What did you learn from last night's game?
Yeah, it was a difficult watch at times as an Irish fan and as an Irish pundit. But look, I know as Irish people, in sport, we absolutely hate moral victories. And I don't think this was a moral victory, even though the talk was after from players and from head coach Scott Beaman that, you know, we're taking a lot of positives from this game. It was a game absolutely characterised by fine margins, and you could hear the absolute hurt in Aoife Dalton's voice there. They knew they were close there, despite the scoreline in the end, 26-7. Looks kind of looks like a vast loss, but I think that was a very, very close game, which was very much for the taking for Ireland.
We have got Scotland and Wales now. We should be beating them. Are we a better team than we were 12 months ago?
100%, yeah. I think I talked about it in the run-up to this week, to this weekend, that the depth that they've built over the last couple of games is something we haven't seen in this team in a long time. The options coming off the bench, you saw Eve Higgins coming off the bench last night, Anna McGann. We haven't had that type of impact in the subs for a long time. And look, it's a young squad. I think the average age of that 23 yesterday was 25. So I'm not getting too existential about that loss last night. Obviously, a missed opportunity. There's a lot of confidence flowing around the camp going into that game, but they'll just have to regroup now, and I do expect them to get 2 wins from 2 in the remaining 2 games in this campaign.
Darragh, talk to us a bit about that idea about them being a better team than 12 months ago, like in Belfast, where France got her over the line by, was it 12 points in the end, but it was a very close game up to about, I think it might have been 7 or 8 or certainly 10 minutes to go, whereas there wasn't a score in the game yesterday after 50 minutes. Obviously a lot of opportunities in the first half. It felt 9 minutes ago when Dan O'Brien overkicks that kick for touch and it goes out. It sort of felt like that was the game gone. But just swilling all that in the mix in terms of your view about them being a better team than a year ago.
Yeah, like Adrian, I think playing in France cannot be underestimated in terms of the impact it has on a game. I noticed once the Clermont band started playing in the corner, the French team started to kick on. There's a reason that it took England the best part of a decade to get a win here, and we've never won on French soil in the Women's Six Nations. I think it's I think Ireland as a team are definitely better. They can improve, and they're obviously there was a couple missed kicks to touch, which, you know, that needs to be cut out of the game. But for it to be a top two team in the Six Nations, a top four team in the world, that needs to be cut out of our game. I don't think anyone's disputing that. But France got on top of the game, and they fed off the energy of the crowd, and that's why it's so hard to win here. And look, I think the next two games, we might write them off as lesser importance in comparison to the French and English games. But I think, you know, you look at last year's Six Nations, Scotland weren't going well in the tournament, but we managed to mess that game up. So these next two games are very, very important to kind of gauge where this team is at. And I think I would expect them to go out and put out two very good performances.
Safe home, Darragh. Thank you.
Thanks, lads.
Darragh McNaughton there, live from France after that game last night.
I feel myself even now really frustrated by it. You know, very good first half, butchered a few good opportunities, and then France did what France do, and they've been very good in the second half across all their games in the tournament so far. And just, like, you can't focus in on one player in one moment, but certainly with that 9 minutes to go, we've an opportunity to pin them back into their into the corner, possibly get over for a score to leave it a one-score game. And a right good of minutes, you know, run a minute, 7-8 minutes to get at it at the end, just to give yourself that chance. And it just never materialised. And in reality, we didn't look the threat in the second half that we were in the first. And the frustration probably also comes from JD, like Dara's point there about, like, obviously, we've a couple of games now on home soil. We'd be expected to win both of them, one in Belfast and one in Dublin. And, you know, there's already 20,000 tickets sold for the one in Dublin, and that's great. And hopefully we'll sell a few more. I think we would have sold a lot more had yesterday gone differently. But kind of no matter what happens from here, as long as we obviously get over the line of those games, there's an element of par about where we're at.
Yeah.
And there's no chance to get past the par
until you're second.
We'll meet France again next year.
At least, yeah. Or surprise England.
Or surprise England.
Yeah, yeah.
We should see about that, but yeah.
Yeah. The Aviva Stadium playing host to this afternoon's Energia All-Ireland League final. So the women's deciders at 1:30, defending champions UL Bose aiming to win a record 16th crown. Standing in the way of them and a third straight title at Blackrock Cottage, the team's exchanging wins in their meeting so far this season. The men's finals at 4, holders Clontarf taking on two-time former winner St Mary's, an all-Dublin affair. The sides were the top two at the end of the regular section of the league. Clontarf hoping to become the first club since Shannon 20 years ago to win back-to-back titles. And Energia AIL updates are thanks to Energia. Think of the possibilities. Arsenal got a three-point cushion now at the top of the Premier League again. They beat Newcastle 1-0 last night. Eze with the winner.
Oof, what a goal.
Great goal.
What a goal.
Plenty of space. I love Eze. Love him.
Class.
I think Arteta was not sure for the middle part of the season, but he's back in the team now. Yeah. You need that maverick. Arsenal, of all teams, need a maverick like Eze in their team. At the bottom was just so dramatic yesterday. Oh. You had West Ham and Spurs ding-donging between safety and relegation. And obviously, we won't know for another four games what the situation will be. But it was West Ham 1, Everton 0. And then Spurs scored in the 82nd minute. Palinia at Wolves 1-0, and then they were out of the relegation zone. Then they went back into it when Callum Wilson scored in stoppage time to give West Ham a 2-1 win over Everton. Very exciting here on Football Saturday, Adrian.
I can only imagine it was 5 minutes of bliss, JD. A little like the clouds broke.
There's little shouts on the radio. It's like it'd be Owen Doyle or Tim Clancy making a point to be West Ham scored. Spurs scored.
If they don't win that game yesterday, were they gone?
Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At Wolves.
It's down to that now.
Yeah, it's down to that. And Solanke went off and Siemens went off. Siemens maybe a more worrying injury. Yeah. West Ham a lot of momentum, playing really well. And the run-ins for both, they both have leads, funnily enough, in the last four games. West Ham have Arsenal at home, but Spurs have got to go to Chelsea. So, and Spurs have got to go to Villa. So I'd still give West Ham the favouritism. I think Spurs have messed up so badly that they've woken up and it's too late almost.
West Ham don't look to be playing like a team that are that low down the table.
No,
at the minute.
That's Nuno's organisation that's bringing that. Liverpool won against Crystal Palace 3-1 yesterday. So we have Manchester City as well. Poor Finn Azar scored a lovely goal for Southampton in the Cup semi-final. And then City scored twice to beat Southampton in the semi at Wembley. So 2-1 win for City on a course for a domestic treble, obviously. And it's Leeds-Chelsea this afternoon. As much as Chelsea, I'm speaking completely neutrally here, I'd love to see Leeds in the final. To just see the colour of that, something different. They meet this afternoon at Wembley. Callum McFarlane in charge of Chelsea, obviously, after Liam Rossini was sacked this week. Celtic won 3-1 over Falkirk in Scotland last night. Hearts looking to build on top spot when they head to Hibs for the Edinburgh Derby this afternoon. Rangers hoping to overtake them if they slip up by winning at home to Motherwell. Sligo Rovers moving out of the relegation spots in the League of Ireland Premier Division. They beat Dundalk 2-0 at the Showgrounds. Katie McCabe's Arsenal continuing the Women's Champions League title defence against Lyon this afternoon. Ronnie O'Sullivan in charge after the opening session of his last 16 clash with John Higgins of the World Snooker Championship in Sheffield. The seven-time winner will resume this evening 6-2 in front at the Crucible. But last year's runner-up Mark Williams out, lost 13-9 to the 2013 finalist Barry Hawkins. And Hawkins will now play Antrim's Mark Allen in the last eight. What was the flavour of the back pages and the supplements, Adrian, when you had your chat with Shane Keegan and Fiona Hayes earlier?
There was a very different flavour, JD. I was kind of surprised by how few pieces there were talking about the week that was at Chelsea and Lemar Senior particularly. Rory Smith was the first article of the day I read. First thing this morning, the bubble burst for football's money man. And this is much about Blue Co as it is about Rossini. In fact, most of them are much more about Blue Co than they are about Rossini. And that's been very much, I don't know how you found it, but certainly the tone of the coverage in the aftermath of the whole thing has been reasonably kind to Rossini. He might have a career from here, but he got caught up in a mess, not of his own making. And there was nothing he could do about that.
Well, it doesn't seem that, not the journalists would be susceptible to PR outreach, but they're not liked, that Blue Co.
They are not
institution. When you read the all the articles from the week, yeah,
It's Rory Smith has a piece in it. There's more Mark Gallagher and plenty more as well inside. There was a piece that really took me, JD, and we'll try and summarize it as best I can here in a short period of time. But it's very much a long read. It's the front page of the Sunday Times. It's David Walsh, and you'll have heard me say this before, and it's not exactly as if I'm an outlier with this point of view. A journalist in the autumn possibly of his career and just churning out the finest of work with unbelievable regularity, and one of the, if not the finest journalists that we've produced in this country. Today the headline says the rugby tragedy that took me to New Zealand, and it was a story that we've covered actually before in the paper review, but certainly it hasn't been covered in this much detail previously. It's the story of David Walsh been at a game in 2016 at the Stoop where the New Zealand Maori took on Harlequins, and there's a great photograph of that team, and they're doing the Maori haka before the game, and it singles out three players in that group: Sean Wainui, Billy Guyton, and Shane Christie, all of whom have subsequently died by suicide. It's a story of, as it says inside, two best friends, two suicides. How did rugby let this happen? And then David Walsh makes his way to New Zealand. Shane Christie's former partner recounts his harrowing decline with the same brain injury that destroys his teammate's life. And he goes into a lot of detail about the unravelling of Shane Christie's final few years and the misdiagnosis that himself and Billy Guyton had had, that they had gone in and they'd said that, you know, they were had mental health issues, whereas actually there was something else at play entirely. And on that basis, they were never able to be helped. So that's it, as best as I can summarise it in a few minutes. But
yes,
I can wholly recommend for people who, you know, it's a question about the existential nature of rugby, essentially. A lot of work has been done over the last number of years to make it safe. Playing time, the gum shields.
But it's gone from a game that was about evasion to about collision now.
Yeah.
Look at the Barbarians try from 1973. That was all about evading players. It was all about getting around your opponent, manoeuvring away from opponents, and moving the ball quickly. And it was an amateur game. The sport then evolved in the professional area to a game of collision now, going through people as opposed to going around people.
And they've tried to mitigate that as best they can.
Yeah.
And they have made brilliant inroads on that. The question remains, is it safe? I suppose is the thing. And actually Fiona Hayes, who was with us this morning, is obviously a former Ireland international herself, was incredibly giving on her own concussions through the years and her own concern about long-term impacts. So it's very much worth a listen if you have any interest in the future of rugby.
Well, that's an example of the bill that comes in a few years' time, very sadly. Yeah. Like, what's the bill going to be in 30 years' time for players right now? We'd like to say with certainty that we know what that's going to be, but we're not sure.
And you know what? We can get caught up and we're all in the same boat, but the broad nature of it is almost impossible to consume. And the beauty of David Walsh's piece is it's not about the broad, it's about the micro. The other piece that I mentioned, Jedi, if that's all right, is that
just before you do, just update you on some scores. Tipperary have won the Munster Camogie semi-final, beating Limerick 25 points to 113. At the moment in Ulster in the semi-final, down 6 points, Armagh 3 in. The Championship in England, Coventry 1, Wrexham 1. A Women's Super League latest, Chelsea 4, Everton 1, London City Lionesses 3, Leicester 1, and Spurs 0, Manchester United 0. All these games in the second half. You might have heard in the very top of the news here, the actual news on the show, Sebastian Sawe of Kenya has won the London Marathon, but also becoming the first ever athlete to run a sub-2-hour marathon in a competitive race, Adrian. Were you going to talk about the Ryder Cup?
I sure am.
I was in that queue the other day.
Where are you going?
Yeah. So I've got a relative, an Irish person, close relative who lives in the UK. This is, will you look into this? We'll make a decision. So I registered the day before and I you know, got my code. And then just before 11 o'clock, I put in my code, went onto the website and was in the queue. I was in the 17,000s.
Okay.
In the queue. And then I said,
for how many tickets?
Well, I was going to see, if I could get maybe four.
Okay.
And then for about 20 minutes, it was going down to about 15,000. Then it stopped at 15,000 and I just left it. And then I went to 400 about an hour later. Then I eventually got in. And when I got in, all the individual tickets for Friday, Saturday, Sunday were gone. And all I could do was buy premium, an access to a hospitality area ticket for about €899 or a weekly ticket for €1,999. And then I spoke to my relative. I said, do you want to do this? And they went, you know what? Thank you for queuing for the hour, but
yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, it's what a carrot if you had a spare €2,000 knocking around.
Yeah.
That weekly ticket.
Yeah. But that's it, isn't it? That is the opportunity, but also the problem.
Yeah.
That the supply and demand is, it just would make you feel, and it's the case for all sports at the moment.
Well, do you know what, JD? We had David Brady on the show on Thursday, and we were having a conversation about the ticket price for the game at Castlebar today between my own Roscommon, and they're not selling any juvenile tickets for the stand. So if a parent wants to bring a child, it's £35 a pop.
Yeah.
And lump it or like it, and that's the way they're working it. And I had text afterwards from people who were going to other games around the country who were in the same boat. I see a picture of the game in Leitrim yesterday, and the stand, I was going to say it was half empty. It was about, I don't know, a fifth full, you know. And it's ticket prices are 30, 35 quid ahead, and you're not allowed to bring kids with you. You have to bring them somewhere else in the stadium. It's something not quite right.
And the GA would be, I would say, give the best value of all organisations, the All-Ireland Final. €100 ticket, I think, is very reasonable. The classics you might see, but there is a societal problem with that is sports attendance now the pursuit of the wealthy and the well-off, as opposed to an equitable thing for
and
society.
The GAA should not go that route. And, you know, I think like that ticket price for the kid in Castlebar went from €5 last year to €35 this year.
Yeah.
That's not right.
No. And the Ryder Cup, like you can go to the Open for about £150 for the day. Over in Liverpool there in this year. But you see, with the Americans, the interest from the United States and I'm sure the Irish relatives that they might have back here, there'll be no shortage. I think 55,000 spectators a day. What they didn't do, though, was disclose how many tickets they did put on sale.
That's what I was curious about.
They did not disclose it, but they think there will be a third of the people every day will be Irish.
Well, listen, I was at the 2006 version,
yes.
As you were yourself,
yes.
Yeah, in the K Club, and quite the experience, and it wasn't quite an inside the ropes experience for various reasons, the way that golf normally is, but it was a tremendous few days, celebrity spotting, golf watching, enjoying the luxuriousness of the whole thing, and, you know, the Ryder Cup is a great thing to go to. However, dear listener, if you haven't managed to queue up for your €2,000 tickets, Conor McKeown has some hope for you in the Sunday Independent today in the bottom part of his Hold the Back page. I mentioned David Walsh earlier, and I put Conor McKeown in the same breath in terms of the quality and wit of his writing. Dry your eyes, you're better off watching Ryder Cup on the couch, he says. The Ryder Cup is both a woeful in-person viewing experience and one of the great TV sports events. Why would you want to miss it by being there in the flesh? Generally speaking, so far as spectator sports go, golf is up there with the puck fodder. He then talks about the ticket prices, and he says obviously almost double the €260 face value spectators paid in Rome 3 years ago. He has a quote, obviously, we're lower than Bethpage, the head of the Ryder Cup says, and as Conor McKeown closes out his piece with, which is a bit like celebrating coming first in a two-horse race, but the other horse is a cow.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, look, I mean, you know, people can spend their disposable income whatever way they want, but the World Cup is going to be an absolute freak show when it comes to the whole Infantino Trump, the ticketing, the dynamic pricing, the whole thing. I hope by the time it gets to Spain in a few years' time that common sense would have prevailed.
I wouldn't bank on it. USA play Paraguay in the opening game in the SoFi in LA, and there remains 30,000 tickets for sale.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, it is bonkers.
It?
Yeah, yeah. There'd be a lot of maybe creative directorial decisions made by TV executives in terms of which part of the crowd they show.
They'll have to do something to get people in there. But even the hotels, reading in the papers today, reporting that it's not... They got a bit of a bump, I think was how they said it. There's not this demand that people had expected.
What's going to be the headline tomorrow, Adrian?
What is going to be the headline tomorrow? That is a good question.
Jimmy's been in matches.
Yeah.
John Coddy's been in matches.
I think Cork Limerick might be it, in the wider significance of, like I said earlier, dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to call. Like, whatever happens, if Cork win, it'll be, well, sure, listen, you know, they had the game in the bank and that was what it was. If Limerick win, it will be you're going to hear an awful lot more of The Last Dance.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing you, Adrian, on the papers with Shane Keegan and Fiona Hayes just after 2:00. And this was the News Round on Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Mad the wrestling in the 90s was. Like, people cutting their face open, jumping off the top of the cages, like sleeper matches, buried alive matches. Like, as a kid, I watched it and thought, like, oh, this is all real, but it's watered down now, isn't it? It's nowhere near it. When's the last time you've seen somebody being hit by a chair in wrestling?
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.